Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington. Home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Perfect. Bang on my chest if you think I'm perfect.
Go ahead, bang on it.
No heart?
You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
This is Patchwork Heart Ministries' Young Catholics Respond, brought to you by Breadbox Media. Now, here's your host, Bill Snyder.
Thanks, Adam, and welcome to the program, everybody. I am Bill Snyder, and it is a pleasure to have you with us, no matter how you're listening. Thank you for tuning in to Young Catholics Respond, whether you're all the way out in West Virginia, Baltimore, or at home in Wisconsin. We thank you so much for listening to today's program. Today, my guests are Barry Smith and Brian Polasek. Barry is the founder and president of the International Catholic Media Association, which is a nonprofit production and marketing company. And Brian is working alongside him to produce a film called The First Seven Steps. And it is a pleasure to have both of you today joining me on the air. Thank you for being here, gentlemen.
Well, thank you, Bill. Pleasure to be here.
So Barry, I want to talk to you first just a little bit about the International Catholic Media Association. Tell me just a little bit about that and, you know, how that came about.
Well, sure, Bill. Initially, when I had done a previous documentary on the Roe versus Wade decision, a documentary called 40, I met a lady by the name of Eileen Vogel who was instrumental in the movement and developed a friendship with her. As it turned out, I later found out more about her and came to discover she was one of the original seven founders of the March for Life. And she told me she wanted to document her story. And eventually, over the next few years, we took those steps to do that. And upon arranging all that, the formation of the ICMA came about in order to develop this story, and that was initially the primary purpose of it. We got deeper into it, it turned out to be such a compelling story and so many other avenues to it that we just didn't anticipate, but it's a wonderful story, and it takes on the seven people who were in Nellie Gray's dining room back in October of 1973 and made that decision to move forward and say yes to forming the first National March for Life. And through a mutual acquaintance, I met Brian, and Brian is the director and videographer and producer of this project and can tell you a lot more about it also.
Awesome. So, you know, Brian, bringing you in just to talk a little bit about the first seven steps, this really is a historic documentary, or actually series, a documentary series. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the importance of the history of, you know, highlighting these people that have dedicated their life to advancing and literally walking forward in the pro-life cause.
Yeah, as we're going through this, and we're discovering as we go, right? Excuse me. And the march is bigger than it has ever been, right? It's just always growing. But the people that are here right now may not know what these people went through to get this thing started in the beginning. And as we're going, right now we're starting with the first 7 steps, and we may eventually even extend that into other points of history, maybe the 80s, the 90s. But there's a very different mentality out there today versus before, but it's the same goal. It's the same love and the same feelings that go into this. So I think it's important for people to recognize where this comes from.
Yeah, coming from the very beginning, you know, I think origin stories in our culture today are very important. Right? You know, we watch a lot of TV and film documentaries that talk about origin stories, and mm-hmm. There's something important about that. I mean, maybe it's my personal bias too. I mean, I like to watch a lot of things about that, because I think there's something when you uncover the history of something, it lends itself to a modern day, it adds to the modern day significance, right? I mean, are you finding that it's adding to the modern day significance? Is that the way you're kind of viewing this?
It is. You know, we were there on site at the last march, and we did some videos and some interviews and things, and a lot of people didn't even know who Nellie Gray was, okay? And of course, that's not the most important part of this, right? But at the same time, people are getting on buses and heading to Washington every year, but they may not realize how hard it was, really, to get this started. In the early going, in 1973, 1974. And how many things had to really come together to make it happen. So it really is an amazing story as we dig deeper into it. There are people in the original 7 that had amazing skill sets that complemented each other. And just for those people to come together in one place to make this happen, that's really saying something.
Awesome. Talk to us a little bit about, you mentioned that Nellie Gray, maybe people don't know who she is, and such a key player in this. Can you talk a little bit about her and her significance and her role in the creation of not only the film, but also the pro-life movement, in general?
Yeah, sure. Just to give you a brief history on Nellie, Nellie was living in Washington, D.C. at the time. She was an attorney, and she had spent time in the service. She was a WAC, and she had a very stern, no-nonsense attitude towards most everything. And I think part of that determination was formed through her time in the service. Nellie was never married, but like Eileen says, the March for Life was her baby, and she nurtured it and cared for it and protected it. So as the others in the original movement were going about their particular tasks, they left Nellie to take care of all the legal aspects of the permits and other contacts in Washington, D.C., because she was right there. So she became the legal eye of the March for Life. And like I said, she nurtured it. She was the mother. She protected it and made sure whoever was involved was fully on board with the cause for life as they viewed it, and viewed the same principles of life that they wrote. So, she was the protectress of the whole organization.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and just to add to that really quickly, in one of the Bill Devlin interviews, he really summed it up really great. There were a lot of people that wanted to have a demonstration to mark the anniversary of the decision, and Nellie Gray wasn't. They didn't know her at that point, and they reached out to another lawyer somewhere and were looking for help and guidance, and he recommended contact Nellie Gray. But then he said something really interesting. He says, contact her about what? We don't know what this is going to be yet. We don't know what we have. You know, we don't know what we can pull off. And Nellie gave it that direction and gave it that solid foundation.
That's, you know, that's so important. I mean, it's a foundation that has stood strong now for over 40 years, right? I mean, this is still going kind of because of her and because of the structure she provided for it, which is awesome. I mean the fact that you guys are taking a look back at this through the first seven steps and through the first original founders of this, I think is very, very important for young people to realize and to see. You know, generally young people out in society today, when you talk with them or you talk with us out there, are always looking for meaning and purpose. I think that's one of the largest things about the millennial generation, or we call them the iGens, who are now in high school and early college. And, you know, how does this film help those young people? Okay, because I know you're targeting them. You know, find the purpose and the meaning, you know, in their own lives, but also like through spotlighting this. You know, is there purpose and meaning in this?
Yeah, I can take. Do you want to talk about that, Barry, or I can take that?
Oh, go ahead, Brian. Yeah.
Looking at this, you know, all of these people now are, you know, getting on in years, right? So
yes.
So a lot of young people look at them and don't really understand that there's a fire in them, right? Because with age, we get more calm and we get maybe settled in our ways, and we don't look like we have that drive and that fire sometimes, okay? But when we look back and see the tremendous undertaking and the energy and the fire and the drive that it takes, we begin to understand that we're capable of that too. You know, as younger people, you know, sometimes a younger person might look at something and say, man, that's really insurmountable. I don't know if I can take that on. Looking at these early people, you know, seven and beyond, it really is inspiring to say, hey, you know what? I can make a big difference.
Yes, and you know what? That's so important that your film does that, and it kind of, you know, shows young people, hey, you know what? There was a fire in these people. You know, they're not just an old person up there on stage, you know, or even behind the scenes talking. Though they're really committed to this, and you can be committed to this too.
And there's go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
And there still is a fire in these people. And there was with the generations, there's a very different attitude, right? So
yeah.
So an attitude of young people in 1973 is going to be very different than in the attitude of a young person today.
Exactly.
Okay. So however, with that invites the young people today to look at the drives and the passions and the energies of those people, and in back in 73, and they can make their own decisions on how to approach it. Okay, so if they've got a better historical reference, they have more data, if you will, to make their own decisions on how they participate.
Amen. Absolutely. You're totally right about, you know, the increased amount of data that we have. That's a perfect word.
That really is. What also is remarkable is today, with, you know, the use of an iPad or a smartphone, you have access to the entire world right in your hand, and you know, can virtually find most anything you need. In 1973, it's really hard for younger people to conceptualize the fact that they had to pick up a telephone and, you know, and many times dial the number manually, not even with push button.
Right.
And that was their main source of communication. That was their thread from getting from Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C. on a daily basis. There was no other form of communication other than the determination of picking up the phone every day And like they said, you know, we worked the phones. And they really did. That was the grassroots concept of this. They sat by the telephone for hours every day and had lists and lists and lists of people. You know, going through a phone book that most people today don't understand. And dialing these phone numbers and getting their committees together and getting the volunteers together and distributing flyers and, you know, just so many forms of communication that people today wouldn't even understand how it worked. But it did work. And through the communication network they had, through getting buses together and getting volunteers together and getting congressmen and senators involved, they were able to get over 20,000 people at that very first march, which and they didn't decide to march till October of 73. So in just a matter of 3 or 4 months, with that type of communication, they put all that together through a lot of effort and through a lot of determination that that they were not going to be defeated. They said, we're going to do this.
And they did do it, which is, you know, amazing and wonderful. I have to take a short break here, guys. I wish, you know, we're going to come back and talk with you guys a little bit more about the film, about, you know, its creation, about and even about this this initial launch of the March for Life. Because I think, you know, maybe that first, very first one had some significant meaning to it. So I definitely want to, you know, talk about that when we return. Thank you guys so much for being here. We're going to take that short break right now, and then we'll come back and talk further with Brian Polasek and Barry Smith. Right back after these messages on Young Catholics Respond, I'm Bill Snyder.
Do you want to keep your finger on the pulse of Patchwork Heart Ministry? Follow our monthly blog, Written on Our Hearts. Simply go to patchworkheartministry.blogspot.com and click subscribe and follow the on-screen instructions. That's Patchwork Heart Ministry. .blogspot.com, then click subscribe.
Hi everybody, Bill Snyder here. Just want to thank you for listening to this episode of Young Catholics Respond. And as a founder of Patchwork Heart Ministry, we have so much more going on than just our podcasts. Check it out at patchworkheart.org.
Your heart is always beating, but you never have to think about it.
Welcome back to Young Catholics Respond. Once again, Bill Snyder.
Welcome back to Young Catholics Respond. I am Bill Snyder, and today I am talking with Barry Smith and Brian Polasek. They are creators and executive producer and producer of the First Seven Steps. It's going to be a new documentary coming out on the March for Life. And we're talking about the March for Life. We're talking about, you know, the pro-life movement in today's episode. So big thanks to both of you guys for being here. I kind of want to talk a little bit about, you know, we talk about the history and everything, but I want to talk about that moment, you know, that and how that moment came about, those first seven steps. And what was it like leading up to and then actually going on that March for Life that very first time back in the 1970s?
Well, I know through the testimony of Eileen Vogel, who was very close to Nellie Gray. Eileen was from Pittsburgh, and her primary purpose was working the phones, and as she always says, it was a grassroots movement. And she spent a lot of time with her committee getting people to come to that first march. And the other people involved, the first seven steps, the seven people all had their own steps to take. And like I had mentioned, Nellie was the attorney. She was handling all the legal aspects in D.C. to get the permits for the march and things like that. There was a gentleman named Bill Devlin. He designed the logo of the rose. There was another gentleman named Lou Gardner who had his constituents and his committee people. Peggy Jacott, who organized the first big fundraiser where they had roses brought in where people would donate $2 and they could send a rose to their congressman or senator supporting the March for Life. And she, in just a matter of a few months, had over 19,500 roses delivered to different senators and congressmen. John Maughan, who has passed away, was instrumental in getting all the buses together from around the country. And Marianne Pierce, Nellie, Eileen, and the gentleman, all those were the first seven people that took those steps. As the march came together, Eileen was at she was at Capitol Hill with her husband, and it was the day of the March for Life. And they walked back in those days, the March for Life met on the west side of the Capitol down towards the mall. And as her and her husband walked around the Capitol building, they saw all these buses pulling in, many more than they anticipated. And there was nobody from the March for Life there yet. John Maughan was actually over at Nellie Gray's condominium having a cup of coffee that morning. And Eileen said to her husband, go get them. We need them here. And so to their surprise, there were a lot more people there than they expected. Eileen ran down to greet somebody, and the very first bus that pulled in was from Illinois. So that's how far the word had gotten out. So whenever they left, they were the first ones there. So then Nellie came over and started addressing the crowd, and Peggy and Eileen and Bill and Lou and John were all up there. And the actual march itself went around the Capitol, around the Senate building, and back down to the mall. That was the extent of the first march. It was just a big circle around the Supreme Court, the Senate building, back down. And Eileen and Nellie and Peggy and Marianne were all up by the very first banner, which said the National March for Life. And as I mentioned, Nellie Gray was a WAC. So her idea of marching was literally marching as they did in the service. And she had such a rigid and brisk pace, they had a hard time keeping up with her. Eileen was pregnant at the time, and she had a hard time keeping up with Nellie's pace. And by the time they circled the Senate building and came back to Capitol Hill, there were still people on the lawn that had not left yet.
Wow.
So they made the circle, and there were still several thousand people that had to come around to make that loop. And obviously, over time, they redirected the route. And but that was generally the picture of the very first march.
Well, and that's beautiful. I mean, that the first March for Life almost turned into a 5K. But that, you know, right? But no. But no, that's a beautiful thing to realize that all these people coming together to do this. But there had to be a little bit more before that as well, right? I mean, this movement was also kind of stemmed. I know we're talking in between the segments off the air about how it was rooted a little bit in the in the civil rights movement as well. I mean, it kind of drew out of that, right? I mean, this is an ultimate civil right. The right to life is an ultimate civil right. So you want to just touch on that a little bit as well.
Brian, go ahead.
Sure. Well, a lot of these people had these civil rights on their mind as well as Right for Life, and they were all over the country. And Eileen, for one, marched with Dr. Martin Luther King, and a lot of the nonviolent marching protest comes from that movement, from those marches, from understanding how that goes. So they patterned this after a lot of those marches. And for that too, we thought it was really important for us to reach out to Alveda King. And Alveda King has agreed to do some of the voiceover and narrate these first seven episodes that we have. So we're really excited about that, and we think that's really important because that's really a place where this, you know, starts from too.
Yes, and it is important to note that Alveda King is a huge pro-life activist. For those of you who might not know her, she's also the niece or grandniece, correct, of Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yeah, she's a niece. Her father was also a minister, and was Martin's brother.
Right. I knew that. Yeah, she's just an amazing speaker, an amazing activist nowadays, and so it's a huge kudos to you guys to have her on with you and narrating the series. I want to maybe just talk a little bit about the timing of this and when people can be able to see this and how they'll be able to see it. So do you want to fill us in a little bit on that?
Sure. We're in production right now. We are still interviewing a lot of the central figures in this, but we've made good headway. What we're anticipating is that we will have a first episode out this coming January.
Awesome. And where are you guys looking at putting this? Like, I mean, is this going to be TV, DVDs? Where is it? How is this going to be distributed out to public?
Yeah, we're hoping to explore all the digital delivery. We're looking hopefully for Hulu and Netflix, all those kind of things, but we don't have that in place yet. But that's what we're looking for.
Awesome. You know, I mean, that's how young people and how actually most people nowadays stream their media.
Right.
So that's great.
Yeah, and we have a couple other distribution possibilities, but nothing until we start to get those first episodes rolling out.
Of course.
And we'll definitely. Work to make people aware of where that is, and that'll be on the webpage. The Facebook channel webpage is thefirst7steps.com.
Awesome. thefirst7steps.com. So anything else? I mean, I know. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me clarify that though. It's first7steps.
Oh, first7steps. Okay, just know the. All right, and of course, Google
correct.
It as well. But so just in the last few minutes, just talk to us a little bit about the future beyond this. I mean, you know, obviously the first seven steps, but I mean, I have a feeling you guys are going to be taking many more steps, especially with the International Catholic Media Association. So what does that envision look like? I mean, you know, how can people get in contact with you to just sign up or be a part of this, to gain momentum with you as you guys are gaining steam?
Well, people can go to Facebook, the International Catholic Media Association, like the page and share that, and get involved. We're through our nonprofit ministry of broadcasting and other production work. There will be updates listed there, and certainly multiple opportunities for people to get involved, be part of the project, and get direction on what other projects that are coming up for the International Catholic Association.
Awesome. You guys, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. You guys both and all the work that you're doing to really spotlight and help us understand the history of a key piece of the pro-life movement, because without the March for Life, I don't think the pro-life movement would exist today. so thank you so much for your dedication, your passion. Is there anything else that I didn't ask you that you want to mention to us? We have about a minute left.
Brian?
Go ahead, Brian. Now, you did ask about moving forward in projects and things, and as we look at this first seven steps, we know that there's going to be more than these first seven stories to tell. So we're going to hope to continue on with this and bring more. Just the story of the fundraising in the roses. that's a couple of different stories in itself, because there were issues and there were accomplishments and there were people, and there are so many stories here that need to be told about how this all came about and then how it continued to progress and grow. So we're hoping to keep this up beyond the first seven.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome stuff. Thank you both. Can't thank you enough for being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, this has been an episode of Young Catholics Respond. Until next time, from all of us here at Patchwork Heart Ministry, I'm Bill Snyder. Keep beating to your Catholic heart.
This has been an episode of Young Catholics Respond. For more information about our program or to be a guest, visit patchworkheart.org, email info@patchworkheart.org, or call 424-704-3278. That's 424-704-3278.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.